This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Flint will not, apparently, follow along the bankruptcy path like Detroit. That analysis from Moody's Investor Service. Even though the two cities share many of the same financial problems, Moody's believes bankruptcy is not in the cards for Flint. But why? John Pato is a University of Michigan law professor and bankruptcy expert. So good to have you with us, John.
Nice to be back. Thank you.
Well, here we have Detroit and Flint, and they do seem so alike, drowning in debt and a shrinking tax base. But do you support Moody's analysis saying bankruptcy is unlikely?
Right now, it's unlikely, but there's a big if, and that has to do with this pension lawsuit that's going on right now.
All right. Let's get into first, before the lawsuit, why would you think it is unlikely, apart from the if?
Because Flint has undergone a painful path of really tough cost-cutting and restructuring, and they took the, the route not followed by Detroit, which is that Flint put in the manager several years ago, rolled up their sleeves, and really started feeling some pain. They reduced their city workforce by 20%. They reduced the pay of the people who remained by about 20%. They voted to increase taxes to cover police and fire services. They have increased usage fees for the various services you take, the utilities. And so everything has become more painful to be a resident of Flint. They've done that, and as a result, they actually have a long-term plan of meeting a balanced budget, and they did not have to go through the bankruptcy process to do it. So through basically rolling up your sleeves, taking some pain, Flint looks like it's addressed its financial problems.
Now, let's talk about this big if. Tell us about this case.
Okay. So if I'm a financial manager and I'm redesigning a city and I get buy-in from the city council, I say, what do we need to do? What if we cut this by 20%? What can we do? One of the things is we have to estimate how much our taxes are going to grow. How much revenue can we bring to the city? And that's related to what, how nice it is a place to live, what sort of economic growth we got going on. So that's one sort of just prediction you don't know. The other is, how much can we make these cuts and how can we make the cuts stick? So it's one thing to say we're going to have a layoff, because if there's a layoff and the people leave, the people leave. It's another thing to say, well, let's go, you know, rob a bank and then we'll have some more money. You can't do that. That's illegal. So one of the linchpins of the financial manager's plan was saying we have to cut retiree healthcare benefits. We can't afford the promises that were made. And that's horrible for the people who are retirees. I don't mean to trivialize that. Mm-hmm. But that's just the approach right now. It says we just have to cut these or else we can't balance the budget. So they go and they say we're going to cut down the retiree healthcare for new people coming in. They're not even going to get retiree healthcare. And that way we're going to cut like a huge chunk. I think something like about 20% or something of the operating budget was just going to fund the retiree obligations. Okay, so they put that on it and they said, with this, with decent tax growth, we can then have a sustainable budget and a new sort of smaller but financially balanced thing. The problem is the retirees came in and said, you can't do that. That's illegal under our contractual agreements in the Michigan Constitution.
Which we heard in Detroit.
Indeed. So if that's right and it is illegal, then the path to balance the budget is the same as robbing a bank. That's not a sustainable plan. But if it is legal and then these cuts do take place, then we do have a chance of a balanced budget. And that's why this is going to be a hotly contested litigation.
So where does it stand right now?
Well, so what happened is they went in, they got an emergency injunction, said, stop it, don't do anything, don't cut anything. And then they went in, they had a little bit more discussion with the court and went up to the Court of Appeals. This is a federal district court. And they said, look, you can put some cuts in right now temporarily, but we have not decided the issue whether this is going to be legal or not. So it's pending. So we don't know. So there's a big question mark hanging over Flint to see what happens with this lawsuit.
Because obviously if the court says, yep, you do have to pay it, that just blows everything to smithereens.
Exactly. And so I think that's one of the things that they've been through a couple managers now. I don't know if it's like a rota system or what, but they're under their third guy now.
Yeah, they're on their third guy. Yeah.
Maybe it's a tiring, demoralizing job. And so he said, look, if I can't win this lawsuit, he said, that's a game changer for me, because that's my whole model is premised upon cutting these retiree things. Now, you know, there's lots of ways to settle things. Not all lawsuits go all the way through to trial, and maybe there's some concessions that can be made, and we can see what's going to happen there. But that is a big question mark that's hanging over the city right now, and it's going to be hard for Moody's or whoever to have their full financial confidence until that lawsuit is resolved.
I'm speaking with University of Michigan law professor and bankruptcy expert John Pato as we look at the outlook for Flint. You know, as you tell me this story, John, and I hear we know that in November of 2011, the state declared the financial emergency. There have been three emergency managers since then. If Flint avoids bankruptcy, does that affirm the idea of state involvement and state-appointed emergency managers?
Yes, with one important qualification, and that is just, and I don't mean to be glib with this analogy, but just when you have, like, you know, a military dictatorship, they say, oh, we just need to stabilize for a bit, and then we promise we'll have elections again in the future. As we've seen in many countries around the world, sometimes it gets difficult for those generals to relinquish their power. Now, if the financial manager is able to turn this back to the city council and have complete control over their finances, and if the city council is able to continue through with a balanced budget, what the democratic process is controlling, then I think that is a victory of a temporary adjustment to financial management going back to the city. So the main thing I'm going to want to watch is not just this lawsuit. I'm going to want to watch what the financial manager says about when are we transitioning back to control over the finances by the city, the mayor, and the council. And I've seen some rumblings. He said, like, oh, yeah, next quarter, the first quarter next year, we're going to do it. But we'll want to see if that starts to slide. You know, Michael Bloomberg, right, was mayor of New York, very popular, successful mayor. And even he sort of said, like, well, you know, these term limits don't seem like such a good idea. Let's get rid of those term limits. So you have to be very careful when things seem to be working out, how attractive the status quo can become.
That's interesting. You listed some really draconian measures that have been extracted from city workers and the retirees. How can cities hope to survive and thrive when workers are getting beaten up this badly or retirees are getting beaten up this badly? Who'd want to work for a city in Michigan knowing this could happen?
It is a very tough question. And there's two different sort of groups, right? There's the people who I think indelicately got screwed, right? I think they were promised a certain amount of comments and they said, we just can't afford to pay it anymore. And because I'm a jaded bankruptcy person, I'm used to that happening. It's literally like you go and people make promises. And this is not just in the public sector. People go and they make pension promises. They say, these are going to be your benefits. And it's like, yeah, we're now in a more competitive world. We're not making the money we used to do. So we're just not going to pay you. Right? And you can point fingers and recrimination as part of the process. And I really do think that's sort of like the steps of grieving. Like you just go through anger and you're frustrated and it is wrong, right? And it is bad. And then the question is, okay, so now that we have a bad, horrible situation, what do we do? And that's sort of like, you know, like the emergency room physician exercising triage and like, what can we hack off to keep this person alive? And no one wants to like have fingers or limbs cut off. But the question is like, what do you do for the best hope for the future? And so I think that's a framework, an analysis that if it's successful, may bring some hope to the residents of the city for future, right? Where the future of this is going. He said, look, now we have a balanced budget. Now people will let us borrow money. Now we can, you know, rip down old buildings and put the money that we do have on the smaller budget into the schools and the places we think where people are going to want to live. So it is sort of this kind of not just a financial, but sort of a psychological turning point. And I think that Detroit may hit that too. But I think it's to Flint's credit that they've done so without going through the bankruptcy process.
If Flint, let's just say things do get blown to smithereens and Flint winds up going into bankruptcy, could things be affected in bankruptcy that emergency managers cannot or don't want to do?
Yes. I suspect, and I haven't looked at the details of this federal suit, but I suspect their main argument is going to be the Michigan Constitution prevents you from cutting our retiree benefits, period. And in the Detroit bankruptcy, they made some precedent by having a ruling on the fact that the federal bankruptcy laws trump the Michigan state constitution. So I suspect what in the back of the mind of the manager is saying, look, if we lose this lawsuit or if it starts going bad, I'm just going to have to file for bankruptcy and we'll start all over again.
And do you think that good things could come out of that for the city?
I mean, as I said, not if I'm a retiree who's hoping for healthcare benefit, but it's a different world now. You know, the new guys they're hiring, and they are hiring new guys. It's not like they can't fill the positions. People still want to work for the city government in Flint are being told, look, we're not going to be offering you retiree healthcare benefits. It's just that's not where we are right now. We've got a Medicare system, and that's it. You can buy private insurance, but that's just not something we can afford to pay. And the same with Detroit. The Detroit unions took very painful cuts, but they even voted. The rank and file supported the management, and they said, look, we should have these cuts to our benefits. No one wants to do this, but we want to try to do it to keep our job and our city together. And so I do think that if there is the model of a stable budget, if you can say, look, we're no longer a basket case financially. We understand we've been dealt a bad hand. There's been changes in the macroeconomic force that we can't even control. Deindustrialization, here's where we are. But you know what? Like Detroit, we can't be a city of 1.5 million people, but we can be a great little city of 750,000. Same with Flint. We can't have all these manufacturing plants anymore, but there's lots of stuff here. There's great infrastructure. There's a great place to live, you know, and so we can be a smaller, viable city. And with that sort of mindset, I think that you could have a sort of a redevelopment resurgence. Never going to be the glory days of the past, but something that's stable and where people feel happy living.
And looking ahead, the present for the people 20 years down the road, the glory days aren't even a part of their consciousness.
Exactly.
So it's a different reality.
Exactly. Life changes. The whole country changes. You know, regions that were once big are small, small now big, and everyone just finds their new way forward in the evolving process of Michigan life.
John, what do you think other cities in Michigan could learn from what's happening now in Flint?
I think it's a great example of showing that you don't have to go bankrupt even when you're broke. Okay? Because Flint was broke and didn't have enough money to cover its obligations. And they said, let's start doing some drastic restructuring. And it's not insoluble, right? That's what's nice to see. It's like, we can't just give up and file bankruptcy. They say, no, you know, if we restructure these obligations, we do owe some unfunded pensions, but let's stretch them out like a mortgage over 30 years. Let's start closing down stuff we don't need. You're not going to get easy solutions. I think that's a sort of a false hope for some cities and say, well, maybe we'll wait for attrition and, you know, like two people will leave and then it will all be okay in the future. Or like, we can cut our costs by like computerizing. That's more efficient. So everything is going to balance. It's not that easy. You're going to have to cut more stuff than that. But this is an example that if you do cut some stuff and you make really difficult decisions, you can get on the road to financial recovery. And there's this mayor out in Flint, you know, who seems very enthusiastic about the future and wants to do it. And I suspect that that transition back over, if that's going to be a question of months now and not years, that could really get that new political environment in Flint energized and galvanized, and other cities could watch that path.
John Pato, University of Michigan law professor and bankruptcy. Great to talk to you. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.